Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show. That roaring sound you hear from somewhere in the northern part of this country are the people of Cleveland, Ohio, probably still burning couches, I'm sure, carrying on all sorts of ironically self-destructive celebrations of victory in Cleveland. The title drought is over. 52 years without a title, and the Cleveland Cavaliers get it done last night. We'll talk in the second hour today to my friend Father Damian Ference. Father Damian, who teaches at the Borromeo Seminary there in the Diocese of Cleveland. He is a passionate, zealous, long-suffering fan of all things Cleveland, and we'll have him on the program. He probably didn't sleep last night, if I judge it by his Twitter. his Twitter expressions last night, man. How exciting for Cavs fans. So we'll get into that as well as the full sports weekend over the course of the couple of hours because, man, there was a lot going on. We'll talk about Father's Day just a little bit and the essence of fatherhood. Also, secularists and Sabbath rest, an interesting trend, at least that I observe, going on among people of no faith, among the N-O-N-E-S. They want to keep some sort of Sabbath, and we'll talk about what that could mean. Also, where old habits go, kind of finding in my life, modern manners on the internet in particular, and Fulton Sheen. And we'll also get into Transcript Gate, as it's being dubbed, Pope Francis, on the validity of modern marriages and words that were changed and what he said and some of the blowback that's coming to Pope Francis because of it. So we'll get into all that on the program today. Certainly, welcome your calls, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to call in and be a part of the program here on Breadbox Media anytime during the next couple of hours. You could also email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, with a thought or question, maybe you've been tuning into the show for a while now, sort of been listening in a clandestine fashion. Been there, done that. Not that I listen secretly to this show. That would mean I've got some sort of issues beyond the ones I'm aware of. But certainly for me, listening to Catholic radio during my time before I was Catholic was an opportunity for me to explore some ideas and expand my thinking and maybe even correct some misperceptions. So maybe you've been listening for a while and you've got a question. You don't even have to have your name associated with it. You could just send it, say you want to be anonymous and ask the question, something you want me to address. I'd be happy to do that. Maybe I can dispel other common misperceptions of the Catholic faith or help better explain why we do things the way we do. So, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, the email, or you can post your thoughts or questions on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle. Of course, you could check out all of today's topics, links to various articles and all the rest by going to our blog, MikeAllenShow.blogspot.com, MikeAllenShow.blogspot.com. Hope you had a great weekend, great Father's Day. If you have a relationship with your father and if your father is still breathing and standing or at least on this side of the veil, give thanks for that. I lost my father 29 years ago this July, next month, very unexpectedly. You know, one of those things where you don't really get a chance to say goodbye. I was 21 years old. I was a junior high youth minister, and I had taken, I think maybe about 20 to 25 junior high kids on a retreat, about 4 hours away. And we had been earlier that day, I remember it very well, July 9th, 1987, had been out inner tubing on a freezing cold river near Chattanooga, Tennessee. And it had been an exhausting day. We were getting ready to have a big evening program that night. As is per usual in youth ministry, and particularly evangelical youth ministry, you know, that last night, you've been kind of building up and culminating, and you're hoping to facilitate encounters with Jesus among junior high students, hoping that all that they've heard over the course of the week and experienced on retreat, something about being on retreat, that they would hear something that would provoke a deeper conversion in their life, or for some, maybe their first real personal encounter with the living Christ. So I was eating spaghetti with my team. We were talking about that night, my wonderful adult chaperones and leaders that we had. And someone popped in and said, "Mike, you got a phone call." This is the days before cell phones, right? So they'd call the retreat center, which I thought was a little strange. And I went to the phone and I picked it up, totally not expecting anything. And it was my mother's voice, my mother in tears on the other end of the line, telling me that my father, age 49, Bruce Allen, my father had had a heart attack and had died. She said it very in a broken voice. She said, "Mike," I mean, I'll never forget the words. She said, "Dad's dead." I fell to my knees. It was like I was in some sort of a fog. Overwhelmed, of course, with the shock of it all. Angie and I, my wife, we were dating at the time. She was there. People trying to comfort me. Somebody from Lexington, here in my hometown where we broadcast from, drove down, met us halfway, brought me home, and we went on from there. Still surreal, almost 29 years later, albeit to say, if you have your father with you, understand that there's no guarantee from year to year. So be thankful for that, and be thankful for even with the shortcomings. I posted something yesterday on Father's Day, and I got a little blowback from it. Imagine that. Tweeted it out, actually. And, I wrote, "Not all fathers are good, but fatherhood is." Not all fathers are good, but fatherhood is. I thought it made sense, thought I explained myself well, but again, in the social media world, you can't ever count on that. And obviously, at least for some, I didn't. Well, actually, two. One gave me some blowback on Twitter and said, "Would you say the same thing on Mother's Day? Would you say that not all mothers are good, but motherhood is?" I said, "Sure, absolutely." Right? Motherhood is a beautiful gift. Not all mothers are good. I mean, that seems to be common sense. I don't say that as a way to denigrate motherhood. Or that was the other response I got on Facebook, was, "What a great day to put fathers down. Not all fathers are good, but fatherhood is." Now, I mean, I thought it was just acknowledging the reality that not everybody's experience of being a father, of being a mother, is a positive one. Not everyone's experience of having a father, or conversely, having a mother, is a good one. And sometimes people get so disillusioned by that that it's hard for them to see fatherhood and motherhood as good things. Or even they transfer whatever maybe negative experience that they've had with their earthly father onto God the Father, which is unfortunate. Because the truth is, and I think this is something I'm trying to learn, and not that I'm doing a good job at it, but I'm trying to learn, is that fatherhood in its essence is who God is. In other words, it's not that we decide, okay, let's pick some sort of an earthly analogy that best describes what God is like with his people. Oh, yeah, fatherhood, you know, a human father and a human son, this is the essence of an analogy that's similar to what God is. And so we think the analogy goes from down to up, from the finite to the infinite. But it's actually incorrect. God is Father by his very nature. Fatherhood finds its meaning in him, such that human fatherhood is only fatherhood to the degree that it participates in the very fatherhood of God. God, who is Father from the very beginning. This is why it's so important that we understand that God the Son is co-eternal with the Father. This was a big deal in the early church, grappling with this question, right, about Jesus Christ and who he was, and this God in three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Was there a time when the Son did not exist? And if you say yes, which is what the Arians said, one of the really probably most popular heresies or false teachings in the history of the church, if you say yes, there was a time in which the Son did not exist, in other words, like the Arians said, or like the modern Arians, the Jehovah's Witnesses say, that Jesus was a created being and not co-eternal with the Father, then you're saying there was a time in which God himself was not Father. The truth is, he's Father from his very essence, because a human father doesn't become a father until he has a son. And so the only way for God to be Father from all eternity is if the Son exists from all eternity. It's a great quote from Archbishop Fulton Sheen, who we'll talk about a little bit later as well. A little boy who had been to Sunday school told his father that he learned that God, the Father, and Son were equal. The father said, "That's ridiculous. I'm your father, you're my son. I existed a long time before you." "No," said the boy, "you did not begin to be a father until I began to be a son." Co-eternal, Father, Son, all fatherhood finds its meaning in him. Happy Father's Day, a day late. We'll be back in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show. Question of the day coming up. This is Breadbox. You are back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, June 20th. Here, I guess, is this the summer solstice today? Longest day of the year. I know sometimes it's on the 20th, sometimes it's on the 21st. I need to check on that. I love summer. I love late days. I like that it's light till 9:15. I don't like January when it's dark at 3:30 or whatever it is. Just saying. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to be a part of the program today. 573-4BREAD-4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Question of the day we're going to take actually from today's gospel reading. We're walking through the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' discourse, longest discourse in the Gospel of Matthew. These values, this vision of the kingdom of God and what it is, this life of discipleship, ordinary discipleship, and what this life in this kingdom of God is to look like. And as I said, we kind of live in a season between two kingdoms. The kingdom of God has broken into the world in Jesus Christ, who has ascended and returned to the Father, yet the kingdom endures through the power of the Holy Spirit and in the presence of his church in the world, the body of Christ. And we live in many ways in which we choose which kingdom we want to be vested in. The kingdom of this world, the kingdom of God, which exist in a sense sort of like parallel tracks. The day will come at the end of human history when the kingdom of this world will be consumed into the kingdom of our God, and he will reign forever and ever. And so we find ourselves in a place of choice. And the Sermon on the Mount lays out really in many ways what citizens of that heavenly kingdom, how they live and what they look like. Discipleship looks like something. Well, today's passage, one of the more better known out of the Sermon on the Mount, probably one of the most often quoted Sermon on the Mount, which presents a particularly, I think, on a certain level, demanding vision of discipleship. We've already talked about, you know, Jesus said, "You've heard, you shall not kill. But anyone who hates his brother is guilty of a similar offense," basically. Or you've heard that you shall not commit adultery, but I say that anyone who looks at a woman with lust has committed adultery in his heart. Jesus also talks about the indissolubility of marriage and how to divorce and remarry is like committing adultery. So there's a go on in some of these very challenging things Jesus says, including not resisting an evil person. We don't often quote those because they seem so unattainable. Well, I would suggest, though Matthew chapter 7 is quoted often, particularly by people of a certain viewpoint, it is no less difficult and challenging. Jesus said to his disciples, "Stop judging that you may not be judged." Or I think as the old King James says, "Judge not lest ye be judged." Stop judging that you may not be judged, for as you judge, so will you be judged, and the measure with which you measure will be measured out to you. And he goes on to talk about, of course, the splinter in your brother's eye, the wooden beam in your own eye, or the wooden beam first before we go after the splinter. So my question of the day is this. When you hear the command, judge not or do not judge, what do you think that means? Now, I'm serious about that. I'd love to know what you think that means in your own words, because I don't think anybody believes it is an absolute pronouncement, right? Absolute in the sense, for example, of I don't think Jesus was advocating eliminating the criminal justice system, for example. Or having someone in authority to settle disputes. There are also many other occasions where Jesus makes very clear that he has not come to abolish the moral law, but he has come to deepen it and expand it. So the words sometimes judge not, I think, are oftentimes used quite easily by persons to suggest, therefore, that there can be no moral requirements there, that we cannot make any sort of morally discerning decisions. In fact, if you were to take these words and take them to their extreme in general application across all scopes and jurisdictions, then you would say, for example, that you couldn't do a background check on somebody who has applied to be a teacher, for example. So when Jesus said, judge not, what do you think he meant? And here's my second one, and I want you to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. How good are you at practicing it? My guess is this is one of the least obeyed commands. I think we all, to a certain degree, have tendencies towards judging other people. We have tendencies towards holding other people to a higher standard than we have for ourselves. Now, some would suggest that to judge means we do not in any way presume to know the spiritual state of another person. So anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. What do you think Jesus meant by judge not? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, 573-gmail.com. Anyway, big story, and we'll come back to this, believe me, over the course of the next couple hours. Huge sports weekend this weekend. As I noted yesterday, there were two men, two fathers, actually, who both had an opportunity on this Father's Day to shut the pie holes of their critics for good. Well, at least for now. Let's put it that way. The first I observed was Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson, who has been an excellent golfer for some time, but on that list, best golfer never to win a major. And the thing that's been so frustrating, I think, for Dustin Johnson is that he's been close a number of times. And his most recent narrative really associated with Dustin Johnson is great on Thursday and Friday, not so much on Saturday and Sunday in the big tournaments. That when the pressure was on, when the heat rises, Dustin Johnson wilts. Now, I'll throw this all in, too, with his pretty quiet demeanor and the fact that he's had some personal issues, I think some addiction issues and stuff to deal with as well. Dustin Johnson, a guy who really was looking for redemption yesterday, and despite, in my view, an absolutely unconscionable move by the U.S. Golf Association. Now, that's what makes the U.S. Open a little bit different. It is not run by the PGA. It is run by the USGA. And yesterday there was a situation where Dustin Johnson, on the fifth hole of the final round, while he was in contention, he stood over to his ball ready to putt, and the ball moved on him without him touching it. And they talked to him after the hole. Well, he actually drew attention. Golf, very much a game of honor. Plus, you're on video, so what are you going to do? But anyway, Dustin Johnson tells them the ball moved. He says, I don't think I made it move. I didn't do anything to make it move. And because that's if he did, then there's a one-stroke penalty. So evidently, 7 holes later, the USGA pulled him aside and said, yeah, you need to know we're reviewing this, we're looking at this, and it could result in a one-stroke penalty for you after the end of the round. As a friend of mine pointed out, it would be like, you know, Stephen Curry hitting a shot that was ruled a three, but saying to Stephen in the midst of a crucial back-and-forth close game, like last night's, for example, at the end of the game, we'll determine whether that was a three or a two. What? No, you tell them now. Make a decision, USGA. Anyway, Dustin Johnson made it a moot point by an absolutely laser-focused approach shot on 18 to clinch the U.S. Open. So Dustin Johnson no longer on that list. Unfortunately for Sergio Garcia, he's still there. I was hoping to see Jordan Spieth do better than he did. I wouldn't mind seeing Sergio Garcia do well, but, you know, an embattled guy, a guy who needs some personal vindication, good for you, Dustin Johnson. And let's hope that Dustin Johnson, I have a feeling that he's going to be like Phil Mickelson after he finally broke through and won a major. Phil Mickelson went on to rattle off several. I got the feeling the same could be true to Dustin Johnson with that monkey off his back. Of course, the Cavaliers, LeBron James, the other father, with a chance to shut the chatter from his critics, of which I've been one. But I said from the very beginning of these playoffs, here's LeBron's chance. If they can go and beat the Warriors, and the way they did it, coming back 3-1, unprecedented, the Warriors going 73-9, all-time best regular season record. If LeBron and company could bring a championship to Cleveland after 52 years of title drought, my goodness, what would that say about him and his legacy? And in my opinion now, what can you say about LeBron James? Unbelievable. And we'll talk to Father Damian Ference next hour about this. He's a big Cleveland fan. But to see the unabashed tears being shed last night, well, there's a lot of cynicism about professional sports, was pretty moving. And then the other thing I want to mention, and this is going to shock you, I've been paying a little bit of attention to the Copa America soccer tournament. You know, I give soccer a hard time. Because it's, you know, however many minutes of play, and it's 0-0, and then they end up going to some sort of penalty kick situation. Not enough scoring for me. But I got a recent friend. He's Argentinian. He's kind of gotten me interested and excited. U.S. playing Argentina tomorrow night in the semifinals. Tall order, no doubt, to challenge the Argentinians. But they play them tomorrow night. And then in the other game, Colombia plays Chile in the other semifinals. So, U.S. surprising Ecuador. So, we'll see how that whole thing plays out. We'll have our What Were You Thinking awards when we come back from the break. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media. Welcome back in to the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. If you want to see our full lineup of shows on our digital stream or the apps for your digital devices or for podcasts, go to breadboxmedia.com. You can see the full list there. If you missed part of this program, you want to catch up on it later, you want to subscribe to the podcast of this program, which is always available a little bit later in the day after we go live, then you can check that out at either breadboxmedia.com. You can look for it on iTunes or on Google Play or on Podbean as well. I also would love for you to become a friend of the show. If you like what you hear, you want to support what the show is about, then you can go for a small donation and become a friend of the show. You can find the link, again, at breadboxmedia.com. You'll also get access to exclusive online content, including some photos and some blog posts and all the rest. So check that on out at breadboxmedia.com. Become a friend of the show. Would certainly appreciate it. Again, our question of the day, when Jesus said, judge not or do not judge, what do you think he meant by that? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or post a response on Facebook or on Twitter. David did the latter, or former, Facebook, whatever. He said, I'm not qualified to judge anyone. I think Jesus wanted us to understand that. I often judge behavior, but I'm pretty good at not judging the person. I have way too many faults of my own to judge anyone else. I do think that's an excellent place to start, David, is with a healthy self-awareness of our own shortcomings. And as it's been said, you know, for every finger you point, you got three more pointing right back at you, no doubt. But he raises an interesting issue, though, and that is the difference between judging behavior and judging the person. Is that, in a sense, where Jesus is going with this? Because it seems clear Jesus, who does not in any way blanch at strengthening, deepening the demands of the moral law. In fact, in many ways, his proclamation of the demands of the moral law should drive us to our knees, realizing how much grace we need, how much supernatural help we require to really live this vision of the kingdom. But it's not as if Jesus in any way says, you know, like the kind of buddy Jesus caricature with the thumbs up, it's all good. No, there are moral demands. And so it's to judge a behavior as being moral or immoral, it's hard for me to imagine that's what Jesus meant here. That therefore we are no longer able to make moral qualifications about particular behaviors. Rather, we do not judge the person, the interior self that we cannot see. But maybe you've got a different spin or nuance on it. I'd love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Let's move on. We're a little late now with our What Were You Thinking nominees, but we've got some to lift up. Come or go home, as they say. Let's span the globe and see the ways that different members of our species have messed up. I guess we could start with the USGA, though I kind of already covered them and their decision to tell Dustin Johnson he may or may not have a penalty stroke at the end of the round. But we've got some other nominees that are just as good. How about this? A man at a suburban West Palm Beach house party. Now, West Palm's pretty swank, isn't it? A suburban West Palm Beach house party told investigators he noticed some yams growing along the fence. That's a southern thing, isn't it? Yams, we call them sweet potatoes. Curious how big they were, the 47-year-old started to dig up a few. Then Jeremy McCook approached him and told him to stop. According to a Palm Beach County Sheriff's report, the pair began to argue. McCook pulled out a gun, hit the man over the head with it, and then shot him, according to the sheriff's office. Ah, neighborly love. No, really? You know, usually if you have neighbors arguing over plants, maybe it has to do with something illegal, something like maybe marijuana. But anyway, this fight over sweet potatoes. Oh, mercy. Our second nominee we're going to give to a lady in Ottawa, Canada. As I said, we are spanning the globe. Ottawa woman accused of impersonating elderly mom for driving test. According to the story, an Ottawa woman is facing criminal charges alleging she dressed up as her elderly mother and took a driving test for her, according to police in Smith Falls, Ontario. An examiner at Drive Test Center became suspicious of a woman who showed up to take a driving test. The woman, a 73-year-old woman, was supposed to take the test, but the person who showed up in a wig, glasses, and clothing suited to an older person appeared to the instructor to be younger. They relayed this suspicion to a supervisor, and they went out to conduct the test. The supervisor called police when the test was happening, and the officer was waiting at the center to question the woman. By the time the test was done, police alleged it was the test subject's 39-year-old daughter who actually took the driving test. It turned out she was taking the driver's test on behalf of her mother, and it told the officer she did that because her mother was nervous about taking the test. So you dressed up as your elderly mother. You know, here's the thing, right? If you're concerned about your mother being able to pass a driving test, maybe she shouldn't be driving. And maybe your concern for her should trump her desire for you to imitate her in taking the driving test. Listen, I know that's not easy. I remember my grandmother, and God rest her soul. She was at a place where, honestly, she had no business driving. But also found out it's very, very difficult. I mean, and rightfully so. I mean, we live in a constitutional society. You shouldn't have your rights taken from you for no reason. So we found out that if we were really going to have to seek to have her driving privileges taken from her, we would have to actually go to court and have her declared to be mentally unfit, which the thought of sitting in the witness stand testifying against my grandmother with her in the courtroom, pretty tough to swallow. But we did have somebody go by to do sort of an evaluation of her. My grandmother didn't really know what it was about, but I remember her talking about it because she didn't know we were behind it. This lady showed up at her door and I guess did some sort of an evaluation. And my grandmother said, she had me on the floor drawing pictures. No idea what kind of test that was. But anyway, so that's our second nominee. But we do have a winner of the What Were You Thinking Award. Again, Go Dumb or Go Home. Man from Southern China complaining of abdominal pain found to have four kidneys. A man from the Zhejiang province, who was admitted to a hospital after reporting abdominal pain, was discovered to have grown an extra two kidneys, according to the Zhejiang Metropolis Daily. The 28-year-old Wang Kalian visited a local hospital complaining at times the pain in his stomach was so severe he could not stand. After being transferred to another hospital, it was uncovered that he had an abnormal number of kidneys. So why is he on our list? I mean, obviously he couldn't help it. Well, if you've got extra kidneys, the last thing you want to do in a land of the urban legend Chinese organ thieves is to tell it, right? So hopefully he won't wake up. You know, if he wakes up in a bathtub, an iced down bathtub, with his kidneys now missing, he'll only have himself to blame. Just saying. 5734 Brent 4, if you've got one you want to share, one from your own life, story that you've come across, always interested to hear. 5734 Brent 4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Let's look back in history a little bit. June 20th on this day throughout the ages. What are some other things that have happened? 1840 on this day, Samuel Morse patented the telegraph. Big game changer at the time, huh? 1863, West Virginia became the 35th state. West Virginia, almost heaven, John Denver saying. So if you're from West Virginia, the Mountaineer State, or you know someone who is, wish them a happy statehood day. 1888, Pope Leo XIII, one of the most prolific popes to ever live in terms of just sheer output of writings. Of course, you know about Rerum Novarum and numerous other papal encyclicals he wrote. published one called Libertas. And in this one, he tried to delineate the difference between modern notions of freedom and really the classic understanding of freedom, which, you know, you had this rise in the 100 or so years before of these republics founded on the idea of freedom. Leo XIII trying to explain something that I think is a key reality for living the Christian life, and that is freedom is not truly defined by doing what I want when I want, but freedom is the freedom to do that for which we were made, the good, the true, and the beautiful. And as I've said, with this country, especially as we approach Independence Day, we better understand freedom not just as freedom from something, but for something if we're going to live it rightly. 1893, on this day, a jury in New Bedford, Massachusetts, found Lizzie Borden innocent of the axe murders of her father and stepmother, yet she continues to be impugned. John Goodman's birthday today, 64 years old. 1957, Coco Beware, the wrestler. His birthday today. He's 59. And Nicole Kidman, 49 today. Maybe hit a couple more of these when we come back from the break here in a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media. Minutes before the hour, you are back on the Mike Allen Show on this Monday, June 20th. Hope you had a great weekend, and I hope your day starts off well today. And certainly if you are a father, whether of the biological variety or you are an adoptive or foster father, what a great gift that is. St. Joseph, what a great model and witness for us there. If you're a spiritual father, you're a priest and the father of souls, or if you have been in some way, we know, every man in his masculine genius is called in some way to be a father, just as every woman in some way is called to be a mother. God bless you and for the gift of fatherhood, which is written into the very essence and nature of God himself. What a singular privilege. I want to get back into this day in history again, because we've got a few other things. On this day, in 1975, the movie Jaws released. It's a movie that every time I run across it, flipping around the channels, if it's there, I'm going to watch it. I still think one of the all-time great movies ever made. Particularly Robert Shaw's run as Captain Quint. Brilliant. On this day, another film, 1980, just 5 years later, The Blues Brothers opened with Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. Another excellent film. Tom Watson wins the U.S. Open on this day in 1982. I remember it well. Jack Nicklaus and Watson dueling there at Pebble Beach. Watson hits one in the rough, I think on the 16th hole next to the green, the deep, deep cut grass. Pin, not much place to, you know, when you chip out of the high grass, you can't stop the ball from running, and it looked like he was going to have a hard time putting it close. Of course, he chipped it in. The rest, as they say, is history. And then, let's see, on this day, and I couldn't stand Tom Watson for many, many years after that, by the way. In 1994, O.J. Simpson arraigned, pleaded innocent in L.A. to the killings of his ex-wife and her friend. And in 1999, on this day, Payne Stewart, on Father's Day, 1999, won the U.S. Open, of course. Only a matter of months later, he would die tragically. We still miss Payne and his plus fours. 573-4-BREAD-4. If you've got a comment or a question, again, my question of the day, what do you think Jesus meant when he said, do not judge? What do you mean? What does that mean, right? We can remember the words of Pope Francis so roundly quoted. Who am I to judge? What does it mean to judge someone else? And rate yourself. How well do you obey this command, do not judge? Anybody who calls and says they rank themselves a 10, you are in la-la land. I'm sorry. It's hard for me to imagine that there's not any part of you or any of us that does not sometimes judge. I think it's almost instinctive. Again, it's our tendency to see the flaws in others much more than we see the flaws in ourselves. I mean, look at the those who present themselves as being the most tolerant. They make no bones about being judgmental if someone is proven to be a hypocrite, for example. Oh, man, they're all over that. Or it just depends on the issue. We all have our own particular pet moral issues that we get all indignant about. Or look at the parent shaming that has gone on here recently with the couple who lost the little boy to the alligator, or the woman whose child got into the gorilla enclosure. If anybody calls and says you get a 10 for not judging, let's go ahead and get you canonized, because that's where you are. So what do you think Jesus meant by do not judge, and how well do you think you obey that command? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. By the way, I mentioned it was Coco Beware's birthday today, 59 years old, the wrestler. You know, I kind of cut my teeth on Saturday mornings as a kid watching wrestling out of Memphis, Tennessee. And Coco Ware, this was before he added the middle initial B, Coco Ware was a good guy. And then, of course, as is oftentimes the case in wrestling, you guys jump back and forth between being on the bright side and on the dark side. Coco Beware ended up on the dark side. But I remember one of my best friends way back in the day, probably, you know, in the early 80s, when Coco Ware was in his prime, Coco Beware. My friend was a popcorn vendor at Rupp Arena, the big arena here in Lexington. And, of course, they had wrestling sometimes. And my friend, who loved to spin a story, I'm sure my friend Mike stretched and exaggerated a story. Of course, he was my best friend, best man at my wedding, died of cancer in his mid-20s. God rest his soul. I miss you, Mike. But he used to tell that he could get everybody just into stitches with the story that he would tell about the time he was selling popcorn in Rupp Arena during a wrestling match that was going on. And, of course, he had the carrying around his neck the big crate with all the popcorns, and there was a match going on in the ring. And, of course, you know, oftentimes in these wrestling matches, somebody would get out of the ring and run out into the crowd or, you know, whatever. I mean, it was mayhem a lot of the time. So my friend Mike, who was probably at the time about 5'5", about a buck 25, was trying to sell popcorn up in the stands. And unbeknownst to him, whoever Coco Ware was wrestling had gotten out of the ring and run up in the stands behind him. All my friend Mike knew was when he heard the crowd go quiet, he heard a voice coming from the ring, and he looked toward the ring, and Coco Beware was pointing directly at him, or so he thought. Actually, his opponent was just a couple of rows behind him in the stands. And Coco Beware, with increasing agitation, said, "I want you," and pointed right toward my friend Mike, vein popping out of his head. A couple of times he said it, then he started climbing through the ropes. Of course, my friend, I'm sure exaggerating, says he threw the popcorn and ran out of the arena, only to discover his mistake later. So anyway, rest in peace, Mike, and happy birthday, Coco Beware. A little mini controversy with something the Pope said broke out here at the end of last week. I know, shocking, right? Pope Francis seems to provoke a lot of reaction to things that he says at times. Imagine that, as the Bishop of Rome, people still pay attention. But this story from Crux, taking the Catholic pulse, most marriages today are invalid, Pope Francis suggests. Evidently, during a Q&A session with Rome's Pastoral Congress, Pope Francis said, "We live in a culture of the provisional, which causes many couples getting married to say yes for the rest of my life without knowing what they're committing to. And for that reason, Pope Francis says, the great majority of sacramental marriages are null. Now, let's understand what he means, right? We got to understand a Catholic theology of marriage. In a Catholic theology of marriage, it is the consent of the couple that makes the marriage. It is not the minister, the priest, or the deacon who is confecting the marriage. The couple are the ministers of the sacrament of marriage. The priest or deacon is there only as a witness to ensure that they truly do make marital promises. But the couple is the one who give the consent. And the church recognizes that there may be things that compromise consent, that what appears to be a marriage on the surface may actually not be. Perhaps a lack of affective maturity, some grave psychological difficulty. Maybe someone misrepresented themselves. They never intended to be faithful from the beginning, for example. And so what appeared to be a marriage on the surface was lacking some essential quality to make that marriage a valid marriage. Here's where I think we get into the mistake. We get into this using of the word sacramental, when really the word we're looking for here is valid, because you can have a marriage that is not a sacrament, which that's a marriage in which one of the two parties is not baptized, because for a marriage to be a sacrament, elevated to the level of a sacrament, baptism's to the door to the sacraments, you've got to have two baptized persons. So you can have a valid marriage that is not a sacramental marriage. And so when we talk about the Pope saying that a large number, and the controversy was, is that there were, when his remarks were actually published, that they were edited to say that some modern marriages are not valid, not the majority. And there's been, you know, debate about this, and you know, did Pope Francis have a say in that, or were people trying to cover up for something he said, kind of embarrassed by what it, or is this even what he said somehow to be taken as a reason to not work at marriage, or to try to somehow make it last? The Pope saying that the majority of modern marriages are null. And, you know, I think John Allen addresses it pretty well on the Crux website. And, you know, listen, it's the Pope, you can criticize the Pope. I mean, St. Paul did it with St. Peter, okay? So don't think it's off limits. I mean, not everything the Pope says rises to the level of infallibility. But it should always be, if it's a critique or criticism, it should always be done with a solid grasp and awareness of what you're saying, what he said, and it should always be done in a spirit of charity. And no one should ever be quick to do it, because he is our spiritual father and shepherd. But he's not that he's off limits. But maybe in the next segment, I'll tell you a little bit why I don't think the Pope is totally off base here. And it's from my own experience of what I've observed in conversations about the nature of marriage. In a sense, how we're all drinking from the same sort of tainted well and culture that we're in when it comes to marriage. We shouldn't be so quick to dismiss what the Holy Father has to say or to misunderstand his intent behind it. So we'll be back with more with a new hour. This is the Mike Allen Show.